Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Jake Gutierrez. It's Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Today on the show, we will talk to Tim Grunhard coming up at 6:30. We'll have Gary Barnett, our college football insider, at 8:05. Mike's Picks with Mike DePasquale at 8:45. Buster Olney, our baseball insider from ESPN, at 9:05. And Dion Kliss will preview high school football with us at 9:30. Sprinkle in Gary Lezak with your bizarre forecast. What's it going to be today? Looks like it's going to be beautiful. Maybe the last really, really nice day, close to the 80s or in the 80s for quite a while. We'll find out from Gary Lezak and check in early on the weekend forecast as well. We could talk some baseball. Like I said, Buster Olney will be on the show later, and he could tell us all about the World Series that is now tied at one game apiece after Tampa gets a win. As you heard right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, they beat the Dodgers 6-4. And so maybe this will be a good World Series. It felt like, boy, especially after that first game, that the Dodgers were just, and maybe this ends up being the case, that the Dodgers are on their way to finally getting that ring for Clayton Kershaw after knocking at the door for several years. But the Rays are going to try to stand in their way and see if they can win their first championship. They win last night 6-4 in a good game, especially if you're rooting against the Dodgers and rooting for the Rays. But all I ask is for a competitive, entertaining World Series. And now after a couple of games, it's even at one game apiece. Blake Snell last night didn't go five innings, but he struck out nine. He walked four, so all hell was breaking loose while he was pitching. And Brandon Lau was the star. He went 2-for-5 with three runs scored. And two home runs, so a huge game for Tampa's second baseman. And Nate, looks like we've got ourselves a World Series here. Let's go.
Right on. Yeah, I don't really care that much who ends up winning the World Series. I think I'm kind of rooting for the Rays, but I just want a good series. You know,
seven games.
Yeah, let's
right?
go to seven games and have some fun. So usually you need a split of the first two games to have a chance at something that good. Not always, but it helps. So yeah, let's go. Series on.
You want seven games, Jake, even though you're rooting for the Dodgers?
You know, if that's the result, I'll take it. I'll take the win. I want the four-game win any way they can get it, but if it goes seven, even better. It means I get more baseball to digest, and I was locked in last night. I thought it was a great game. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good baseball going on. Enjoying it.
Got some good football tonight for you.
Yeah.
What do you mean by good?
I don't know. I mean, it's NFL, so it's good just by default.
Good players.
Are there?
Some of the best players in the world.
Could be a division winner playing tonight.
Yeah, could be.
Some of the best players in the world on one of the elite organized football teams that that exist.
A couple recent Super Bowl winners,
I
relatively.
You know. And really, like...
the race to six.
Like Nate said, there's maybe a share of first place riding on this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's team to get to six wins is going to win that division.
Don't be scared off by the combined records of the Giants and Eagles being 2-9-1. Ignore that. What you need to focus on is this...
That's a toilet flushing, Steven.
Right. This super tight NFC East race where like SEC football, it just matters more. Every single game for every one of these teams has first place implications riding on it. Right? Are all their point differentials in the negative 30s and 40s and 50s? Sure they are. Have all these teams been getting their asses handed to them by the rest of the NFL? Yeah, of course. But you put it all in a bowl and mix it up, and you could bake something very delicious because the Cowboys are 2-4, the Eagles are 1-4-1, the Giants are 1-5, and the Washington football team which, boy, that's a franchise that does everything right. They've let people know now, because they're working so tirelessly on renaming the franchise, that they're expected to be named the Washington Football Team in 2021 as well. It's just too much to ask for them to get it done by next year. So they're gonna be without a name until 2022, because they, boy, do they know how to get things done in a hurry.
Well, maybe that's why how long it's going to take for them to finally replace the owner. You know, they don't want to come up with a new name until they actually have a decent owner.
Why don't you just no name? Just you're just going to be the Washington Football Team forever. That's just what they're
kind of like it.
I mean, just that's what you're going to be.
Washington FT.
Yep, you're the Washington Football Team. Yeah,
you should be the Washington Generals.
It's a good name. I don't know if they deserve it though. That's my point.
You know.
I think they kind of just deserve to be called a football team at this point in time.
Really? I'm not sure they deserve that, but let's go.
it is a high bar.
So here it is. You've got and so then tonight the standalone game in the NFL is a battle for supremacy to see who can catch the Cowboys, who could tie the Cowboys with two wins in this division, as the Giants are at the Eagles tonight. For those that are interested, the Eagles are favored by 4.5 points. Not expected to be a shootout, as the over-under is 45. Very popular waiver pick is the Eagles defense this week, but I'm just having nothing to do with either one of these football teams. If I could help it, I was already stupid enough to waste a draft pick on Zach Ertz, and he's done absolutely nothing now except to get a high ankle sprain, so he's out for a month. But I was able to claim Dallas Goedert because somebody tried to sneak him through waivers. Not going to happen in this league, people. Not when I'm starving for – not when I got bad ankles to Zach Ertz and Jonnu Smith, okay? Welcome to the competitive pricks, Dallas Goedert. We appreciate your help. And so that's football. That's all I can tell you. It is NFL football. It'll be on TV, and you can watch it if you'd like.
There'll be fantasy implications.
That's right.
Boy, will there be? I would not want anyone, really.
Well, in my in one of my leagues, we start two quarterbacks, and so I do have Carson. I'm choosing between Carson Wentz and Derek Carr.
Why is that? Why do you start two quarterbacks?
The commissioner said that it makes people want to draft quarterbacks more. You know, because everybody just waits to draft quarterbacks.
I'd like to punch that guy right in the face.
I've never been in a league that has even suggested
I'd really want to punch that commish in the face, right in the mouth.
You know that commish pretty well, and a bunch of your buddies are in that league.
Jake, have you ever heard of that?
Tell me who it is. I'll punch him in the mouth. No, yes, I have heard of that, but it makes no sense to me.
I'd have to politely decline the invitation to that league.
Well, I mean, you like to keep the game as close as possible to a real football game. You know, it is fantasy. So I like to have rosters that look similar to the actual game going on the field.
Why just like a reason for it? You know,
well,
why
I mean, why there's never a point in time where there's two quarterbacks on the field at once. Usually, I mean,
Baltimore tried to do it with Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco, but Joe Flacco was very resistant. But he was out there for a play or two.
Right,
the Eagles might do it a little bit.
How about that? There's his justification.
Well, there you go. That's why
in
a while, there's two quarterbacks on the field at the same time.
Well, that reason you just gave was awful. What's the real reason? There's got to be something.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't audit the whole situation.
It puts a higher value on the quarterback.
When you signed up for the league, I didn't ask you to audit anything. I'm asking you why you're in that damn league.
It kind of screws you. It kind of screws you when you're looking for a bye week quarterback.
Yeah, like you have to.
I mean, it puts more value on.
I think
position.
That's the idea. Like in a lot of leagues, if you just need to go pick up a quarterback, it's not hard to find a decent one because you don't need to have that many on your roster.
It's an effort to be different, and that's fine.
I don't know. But
no
anyway, so I have to start a second quarterback. You don't have to. It's a flex. It's a flex position, but it can be a quarterback.
Right.
There's
so you don't have to start two quarterbacks.
Yeah, there's
a flex spot with a quarterback? This is weird.
But the quarterback usually scores more points than these other guys, even the mediocre to bad quarterback. Like, Carson Wentz is probably going to score more than most other position players on my bench.
I don't want to hear about this anymore. It's making me irrationally mad that something like this exists.
Bottom line is I'm starting Carson Wentz over Derek Carr this week. So I got fantasy implications tonight. He's my backup quarterback starting. So
I don't understand. So taking it back.
Well,
this, but
that's, you know.
It's fine.
It's whatever.
You know what? That's right. Whatever.
I will admit it makes me care about the quarterback position more than I do on my other league. I don't. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know.
It makes you care about it more?
Yeah. Because I feel like you can get a decent quarterback middle rounds in if it's a quarterback league, in a league where you start one quarterback, it's not that hard to find a decent quarterback. But when you have to have two of them, you kind of, then all of a sudden I carry three on my roster, that type of deal. That kind of deal.
Yeah.
I'm making you mad. Let's talk about something else.
That's an interesting approach. Just what do you know? I mean, I care about the quarterback. I only have one. I feel like I care about it more. How about
You get, and so, because you could probably, when you have a bye week, it's not that hard to go sign one, right?
Well, there's like, I discussed this with Jake, there's like four or five quarterbacks are available, and they're god-awful. And they make you sick.
I'm going to stop you right there. At knowing who's in your league, let's not go any deeper into that conversation.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm not.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm just telling
you. There's someone guilty of undercutting me in a trade offer.
Oh, Petro.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
He undercuts you in a trade.
He
had no idea that Patrick Mahomes was even available for a trade, and I'm in the middle of like a week-long negotiation.
How the hell is Patrick Mahomes available for a trade?
This is before his first year starting.
Oh, I see. Dynasty thing.
Yes,
yeah,
dynasty.
Gotcha.
I was working on a deal. I want this kid on my team.
I made the mistake of campaigning for Jake to trade for him before that. I said, look, you gotta do whatever you can to.
And so I started open negotiations. And then
Petro
I start
was
talking
to the show
about it,
and that's what happens.
And so, the jerk off he was dealing with didn't even come back and say, "Hey, I just got offered this. You want to match it?"
Yeah,
well, that's his fault,
right?
He could have played you guys.
I gotta be honest. I respect Petro for that. Doing his research.
Well, that's
why
I'm stopping Steven from talking about bye week quarterback.
I got you.
Right.
Don't give anything away.
Right. No.
They all suck. They all suck.
All of them. No one. You want
to. I was looking at trying to get one early. Like I don't want to put a claim in for anybody. Any of these garbage quarterbacks. I'll just let them stay there and ride with Mahomes.
Marinate.
When I get there. Whoever's available. That's what's meant to be in Week 10.
Has anybody picked up Tua in your guys' leagues yet?
I thought about it, but I'm.
Want to see something first?
I'm not. There's too many things going on right now with bye weeks and especially with COVID and everything else. You don't know, and you gotta.
Yeah, speaking of your Derek Carr, he might not even have a game this weekend.
Yeah,
as the Raiders,
so you never
their
know
whole offensive line home. Yesterday.
Well, that's a feel good story.
Oof.
No.
As Jake mentioned, the Las Vegas Raiders preparing to place right tackle Trent Brown on the reserve COVID-19 list. The team sent home all five of its starting offensive linemen due to contact tracing, John Gruden said. He said, I guess they were around Trent. He said in a video call to reporters, I can't get into things any more than that, but hopefully we'll get some players back tomorrow or for Sunday. Of course, the Raiders, coming off their bye week, play host to Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday in Las Vegas. And John Gruden said, how happy am I? I'm not happy. I'm concerned. And so he's very concerned about his offensive line, especially going up against a very good defense like the Buccaneers in a big game on Sunday Night Football. So we will monitor that situation as it happens. It's just you prepare for the unexpected. And we'll see how this affects the Raiders for Sunday Night Football. How about we take a nice break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more football with you. We've got Tim Grenhard coming up at 6:30 as well. All that and more coming up right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot.
Obviously, when I decided to come here, I already knew, the weapons, and it's only one football to kind of go around. So, the time where I do get my opportunity, I think it's going to be a lot of opportunity to kind of show what I can do in some space, running routes. I think this offense is really fit for my skill set. I think Coach Reed does a good job of, getting backs the ball in space, and I'm glad I got this opportunity.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That was brand-new Chiefs running back Le'Veon Bell who spoke with the media yesterday as the first time as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's hear more from Le'Veon Bell. He was asked about the impact that his friend Chris Jones had in his decision.
Yeah, during the process, Chris Jones was definitely like, I trained with Chris Jones over the, you know, in the summer off season. It was just crazy. Like, you know, when I was a free agent, you know, 2 years ago, he was kind of advocating me to come here. It didn't happen. You know, so when it came out the second time, you know, he was kind of making jokes like, hey, don't make a mistake again. You know, you might as well come on. Don't make the mistake again. And, you know, he stayed in my ear on me about it. I'm glad he did. You know what I mean? It ain't like he gave me much influence. I kind of wanted to come here anyway. But he definitely, you know, was in my ear about it. And I'm glad he was.
Let's hear more from Le'Veon Bell. He was also asked about the challenges of moving into a new offense during the season and how big his role will be this week against Denver.
I mean, I think the challenge is just really is like the terminology of, you know, the words. So, you know, prior teams, you kind of know what protections and names are. Here, just like different names and things like that. But it's not too tough. You know, I think the longer I stay in my playbook, the more serious I am about my playbook, that's the bigger my role would be. You know, I just got to get a grasp of everything. I think so far I've been doing a good job, and I'm going to continue to grow. You know, I know there's probably no limit to this offense and what he can do. So I just want to continue to grow and keep learning. We'll see where it goes.
Here's more from Le'Veon Bell. He was asked if his unique running style works everywhere or if he has to adjust it to who's in front of him playing the offensive line and what the play call is.
Everybody kind of like talks about my style, and I just feel like for me personally, there's times where I'm patient and there's times where I'm not. You know, like if the hole's there, I'm going to take the hole, you know, but if it's not there or if it's a small hole and I can create it and make it bigger, then that's when I try to improvise. I try to manipulate defenses, and that's when you see the patience kind of come in. But, you know, if I'm running, you know, outside zone or something, the hole's there, I'm going to stick my foot in the ground and take it, you know. But a lot of times in football, you see it. Defenses get paid, too. So they're going to make plays. They're going to have, you know, the O-line may not get the greatest push on the D-line, and you may have to help the O-line out a little bit. You know, and that's when the kind of like the patience kind of come in. You kind of see, like, I'm kind of setting things up. So, I mean, it really depends on the play, you know. I mean, I don't necessarily try to go in thinking I'm trying to be patient. I'm just kind of reading my blocks and improvising what happens.
Now, if you're Le'Veon Bell, obviously you have to be thrilled that you go from the worst team in the NFL to the defending Super Bowl champs. And imagine Le'Veon Bell when he's on the field with the Jets offense. I mean, everyone keys on him. There's not a whole lot of playmakers around him to take attention away from him. Then fast forward to when he actually suits up in uniform for the Chiefs and is out there. Just think how good that has to feel, that he's just a guy out there that won't get so much attention, which is going to allow him to make more plays and give him room to make more plays and create and be the playmaker that he's been in the past, hopefully. Here, Le'Veon Bell was asked how the defenses would look at him differently in the Chiefs' offenses compared to what he was seeing with the Jets.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot different. Just for the simple fact that, you know, it's a lot of, you know, we run a little bit more open sets here. You know, I think there when we ran it, it's kind of a little more downhill. Here it's kind of like horizontal, reverses, misdirections, all type of things, you know. So defense don't really know if you're coming inside, outside, or way outside, you know, screens, all type of things. And I think, you know, in this offense, just so many guys carry the ball in so many different directions. It's kind of hard to prepare for one guy, you know. So I think that's the biggest thing for me.
Nate Ducati, Jake Gutierrez, any reaction to the comments from Le'Veon Bell yesterday?
I think that absolutely makes a huge difference in what's available in the run game is the fact that the Chiefs make you respect every inch of the field. You have to defend sideline to sideline. I think all the jet sweeps, we saw that when they did a good job showing replays of the last game that the Chiefs ran a lot of fake jet sweeps that sent the linebackers and safeties chasing Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman toward the sideline, and then that opens up more space in the middle of the field for the run game. And the fact that you have to play people deep because you've got to worry about those guys getting behind you as well. Absolutely, it opens up a lot more in the running game, and hopefully that'll help Le'Veon Bell, just like it helped Clyde Edwards-Helaire a whole lot in the last game. And it sounds like he's got a healthy attitude towards what's going on here. I heard him, you know, when he said there's only one ball and there's a lot of playmakers here, he knows he's going to have maybe less of a featured role here than in places in the past, but he's going to be on a winning team. And I think after being on a losing team for a couple years, he'll appreciate that a lot more than had he come here straight from being with the Steelers and all he'd ever known was winning. You can kind of take that for granted a little bit, and then you start thinking about, well, what about mine? Where am I going to get mine? Now he's had to suffer with a bad organization for a couple years, or at least a year and a half, and now he sounds to me like that's given him a good perspective on, it's not really about me, it's about we, and I get to be a part of something special here, so I think it's going to be great.
We will be back with Tim Grunhard next, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yeah, I mean, I've had kind of a up and down experiences in Denver. I mean, I've had the win my first game ever starting. That week 17 game, week 16, whatever it was. Then I had the Monday Night Football game where we got the comeback victory, and then I had that game where I got hurt. But if you've looked at it, I mean, it's a great atmosphere to play, and I like going there. I mean, obviously not the fans this year, but they're usually a great fan base. They love their football, and so I'm excited for it, and it's going to be a snow game, and I'm pretty excited for that as well.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. A lot of things have happened with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in Denver. Hopefully this will be another good chapter on Sunday. Another man who spent many cold days in Denver playing for the Chiefs. Tim Grunhard now joins us. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, these guys are getting lucky, man. They're getting a lot of these fun snow games. This will be a couple of years in a row now they've had a snow game. So
my son's first game ever, regular season game, I took him last year. His birthday's in December, and so I took him to the Chiefs-Broncos game, the snow game last year, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
We loved it, man.
Those are special.
Yeah.
Always a lot of great memories. One of the things that my high school coaches used to say is, let's play to Thanksgiving, and maybe we'll get a snow game, because Thanksgiving, obviously, was a state championship, and then, you know, in the playoffs, we would every once in a while get a snow game. No big, accumulations, but, you know, some flurries, but... I was telling Frank last night, I'll never forget, my big snow game was up in Denver. And the weather was a little bit like yesterday when the game started. It was a little bit misty. It was about the mid-40s, and it was a little cold. It was a little bit windy. But we went out there, and, you know, just kind of a normal, you know, just kind of cloudy day up in Denver. And as the second quarter started to roll around, just a little bit of flurries, a little bit of snow started coming down, and went in at halftime and came back out, and there was like 3 inches of snow on the ground, and it continued to snow hard the rest of the game. And that was the game that Marcus Allen got the record for touchdowns scored by a running back. And, boy, it was just a lot of fun. So these guys are going to have a blast. And with the kind of running game that they showed last week, and I tweeted out that Marty Schottenheimer would have a big smile on his face, and he would. And it was a fun game to watch for us old offensive linemen, guys that played in that kind of system. It was fun to watch those guys do it. We understand with the analytics and everything else now that you got to be able to do all kinds of things in the NFL now to win, and you have to do different things to win a Super Bowl. We obviously didn't have Patrick Mahomes, so we weren't able to do some of those things. But it was fun to watch the offensive line. It was fun to watch those young guys, Kilgore and Alec Reddy, and even Wiley started to pick up his game a little bit inside, kind of feeding off those other two. They were finishing blocks. And one of the things that you're going to have to do, and I heard while I was driving in Latavian Bell talk about his, you know, patience and the things that he does with the ball when he's running it. And if you're an offensive lineman, you have to finish your blocks with a running back like Bell, because he's going to set you up. And if you continue to push, you continue to keep your feet moving, you continue to finish plays, you're going to see, he'll set you up for success. So that's one thing that they're going to have to do a little bit different than maybe they had to do with the running backs they've had here over the last couple of years. But he does have the ability to put his foot in the ground and run through the seam or run through the hole if it presents itself. The other thing the Chiefs are going to do a bunch more, I think, with Bell is run some of the gap running plays, some of the power, the counter, the traps, because he does a really good job of setting those blocks. If you think about it, the one thing that this guy does really, really well with running the ball is setting blocks. And gap run plays are set up for setting blocks. When you run your zone plays, he has an innate ability to set blocks in a zone, which is really hard to do because you have to have the ultimate confidence in your game to be able to do that because, I mean, you're basically floating around back there waiting for that zone to open up. So we'll see if the Chiefs can do that with him. They're not really set up offensive line-wise to do that right now. But with these young guys in there, they got a better chance. But the one thing I want to tell everybody here in Kansas City is there are actually two things. Number one, this guy is an unbelievable pass protector. He does a great job. And we could talk about it maybe in the second hour about some of the responsibilities that he has and what he'll do for this offense with pass protection, which is really, really vital, I think, with Patrick Mahomes back there. And number two, he does a great job of running routes. He can catch the ball. He's a proven pass catcher. I'm not saying Hilaire is a guy that isn't proven, but this guy's a proven pass catcher. And this is what I'm making my little Marty Calden green box statements where you'd make a prediction, you'd put it in a box, and if you were right, then you're right, Grenny, or hey, you're right, Zotter. You're going to see both Allaire and Bell in the backfield together. Mm. And they're going to move one or the other guy around, and that's going to cause so many issues. Number one, you're either going to have to take a linebacker out of the box to cover him, or you're going to have to take a safety out and top him off. And that just opens up everything else. That's why defensive coordinators, and Fangio even said it kind of in a roundabout way earlier in the week, that this new dynamic, this new dimension of the running game that the Chiefs have with Hilaire and Bell is causing so many havoc, so many problems, and caused so much havoc with defensive coordinators because you have to account for those guys. And when you account for those guys, then you have to take somebody off of Kelsey, or you have to take somebody off of Hill, or you have to get out of a zone defense that you don't want to get out of. So couple things. Last week, Buffalo decided, hey, we're going to do what the Chargers did. We're going to do what the Raiders did. And they're going to drop their linebackers at the snap, and they're going to drop guys deep. And the Chiefs ran the ball well. So now teams are going to have to figure out what are we going to do. And we could talk about that here a little bit in the next hour.
We have Tim Grunhardt in studio. You can follow me on Twitter at SSJWHB. I've just posted a picture of me, Grunny, and Todd Lebo the night before the Super Bowl in Florida at our huge celebration. We'll find out what was on Grunny's shirt next on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've done well. I mean, I've done well enough to win the games for the most part. I always look to improve, always look to get better. But I feel like as an offense and me personally, that we're really improving game by game and really understanding what's there and what's there to be had and what's there to go get. And so we're doing a great job of that. And I'm just excited for the progression of keep getting better and better. And as we get more and more challenges, being able to step up to that challenge and make adjustments quickly. And I don't think we're doing a great job of that so far.
All right, Timmy, we'll talk about what might have been on your shirt down at the Super Bowl in the 7 o'clock hour.
Okay,
that's a tease.
That's a tease.
That's bait for the listener. Now I want to spend this segment talking about the interior offensive line. That is your specialty, and this is a good time to talk about it. As you mentioned, some new faces. Let's focus on Daniel Kilgore, because the Chiefs signed him August 27th, right before the season started, and we talked about it because it felt like, okay, this could end up being one of those signings that we don't talk a lot about, but could end up paying some nice dividends for the Chiefs, because they're getting a guy that had started 13 games the previous year in Miami and before injury back in 2016 and 2017 had started a combined 29 games for the 49ers. So he comes in here with plenty of good experience, starting, I think, a career 57 games or 56 games before he got to Kansas City. And so we know that Austin Ryder was trying to battle through a knee injury. So let's focus on Daniel Kilgore as a guy that came in here, 32 years old, a veteran that started a bunch of games. What did he bring to the offensive line when he started at center against the Buffalo Bills?
Well, when you watch him, he knows a lot about just the kind of the techniques and the responsibilities of an offensive line, which is really important. Once again, we always talk about hesitation in the NFL. You are trying to get a defensive player or an offensive player to hesitate or just to pause for a little bit, because then you win. Most guys are pretty similar as far as abilities in the NFL. There's not a lot of guys that there's a big drop-off. There's not like in college or in high school, you find the weakest link on the offensive line, or you find the weakest link on the defensive line, and you try to take advantage of it. There's really not that in the NFL. Now, there's guys that are better than other guys, but you go from superstar to, you know, good. Okay, so there's not that. So what you try to do is you try to outmaneuver, and you try to get guys to hesitate or to question themselves or maybe not being on the same page with the guy next to him. And I thought that Kilgore did a really nice job of communicating in there. And one of the things we talked about a couple weeks ago in the morning on this show is the communication I thought was off in the middle of the offensive line. I couldn't figure out why, because, you know, Reeders, I like him. I think he's a good kid. I think he really is an overachiever. You know, listen, they won a Super Bowl with him, so, you know, that's pretty damn good. But I thought for some reason or another, maybe because LTD was out Tardif was out, and maybe, you know, there's some new guys in there that the communication and kind of being on the same page wasn't there. And in the middle, you know, when Zotter and Will Shields and I were in there, I mean, the communication was one of the things that we really, really worked on all the time, because you got to be on the same page. And one of the examples I gave last week, you know, before they made this change, was that it didn't seem like the guard and the center were on the same page and some of the pass protection things they were doing, because the center was leaving. I don't know if you remember me talking about this. Center was leaving a little bit quick on those one techniques, and they were getting penetration in some of the holding calls that Osemele had. Were, you know, they were tough holding calls, because he had to get his body across a one technique, which is hard to do when a guy's on your inside shoulder and you got to cut him off and pass protect at the same time right in the middle of pocket. That is a really, really difficult thing to do. So the center, what his job is, all he needs to do is to turn the inside shoulder of that one technique. If you can turn the inside shoulder with a punch, that gives that guard enough time to get across. You don't have to stone him. You don't have to move him. All you got to do is turn him. Once again, get to that hesitation. And once you get to that hesitation, then that guard can get there. So I thought the communication was really good inside. The other thing that I thought, and maybe, you know, maybe it's just because of the game plan, or maybe it was because of the way the Buffalo Bills were playing, I thought that Kilgore, Allegretti, and even Wiley, they were finishing plays. They were driving guys down the field. One of the things that always bugged me about the offensive line for the Chiefs, and I'm not sure if it was something they were taught or the way that they just did things, they would get on guys and they would stay in front of them, but they wouldn't finish guys down the field. When you look at great offensive lines, and there are some great ones out there, Pittsburgh was one of them, Dallas was one of them. You know, there's some of these teams are struggling now. The Raiders were one of them. You always see guys finishing blocks. And one of the things that Howard Mudd, God rest his soul, would tell Zotter and I, and when Will came in, Will, is, hey, listen, when you get on a guy, you've got to finish him. You've got to keep pushing. And this doesn't mean that all of a sudden if you stalemate that you stop. Because, once again, you have Bell coming in, right? A great running back. And what does he do? He sets up the offensive line. So if you continue that pressure, continue that push on a defensive lineman, and he's peeking in the backfield at a running back like Bell, you know, once Bell sets him, now he starts to move. If you have your feet moving and you're continuing to push and you're continuing to work the play, then you can get a good finish on him and take him farther than he wants to go. And that's what Bell's looking for. That's why he does such a great job of getting yards after patient sets. And that's what the Chiefs need to do with him. But they have those guys in there right now that have that in them. I don't think they had that inside over the last couple of years. They had guys who get in front of you, guys who would be nice seams, but there was no big push. And when you saw Allegretti and you saw Kilgore do that, you know, it started to become a habit. It started to become something that the whole offensive line was doing. And once again, I've said it many, many times, it's a kind of a deal where all of a sudden you see one or two guys doing it, and you say, you know, hey, the offensive line, they kind of follow. So you're going to see more of that, I think, with that kind of attitude inside.
We have Tim Grenhard in studio. We have a few minutes left, and so let's focus a little bit on Nick Allegretti. Mm-hmm. The 2019 draft, fellas, this has the chance, top to bottom, just to be a really good, solid, productive draft for the Chiefs. They've already got plenty of return from Mecole Hardman and Juan Thornhill. Colin Saunders is designated to return from IR, and so that was their 2 second-round picks and then their third-round pick. In the sixth round, they got Rashad Fenton. That's already been a damn good pick. The other sixth-round pick was Darwin Thompson. He's been on the field. We'll see how he turns out. And then the seventh-round pick of that draft, Nick Allegretti. And we saw him perform very well this past game. So, boy, all six players have had some type of impact already, and will remains to be seen how much and how well this draft will look in a couple of years. But so far, so good. Allegretti is that seventh-round pick. You've been talking about him, Timmy. He looked damn good against the Bills.
Yeah, he did. You know, he's once again, we go to attitude and toughness. He's a tough guy. He may not be as athletic as some of the guys that have played in there over the last couple of years, but he is really tough. He's really physical. He brings a lot of attitude. You know, he's a mauler. He's a groundhog. He's a guy that he wants to get in there and get dirty and get nasty and play hard. He's a kid from the south side of Chicago. I think he's from like Plainfield or.
That's
or
why you like that's him. What, that's why you've been talking about him so much.
And so he brings a lot of attitude. And I remember when they drafted him, I talked to a couple of the guys from University of Illinois that coached him, and they said that this kid he's a pit bull. When he gets on you, he's just not going to let up. And we saw that. Now, listen, he's not as athletic, so there's going to be times when he struggles with movement and stuff like that. But if he gets on you, Katie, bar the door, you're going to go for a ride. And that's the kind of stuff that you got to have. You got to have that attitude. I'll give up a couple, you know, guy getting beat physically at the point of attack every once in a while, but to get a guy that's so nasty and tough that he's going to set the tone for that offensive line. I think you're going to see, and you know what? One of the things that we did, Zotter and I, we're not patting ourselves on the back. When we came in, Howard Mudd said, hey, you two need to set the tone. Doesn't matter if you're young guys. You go out there and you finish and you play hard and you play physical, and it's going to be something that all the guys are going to do because it's contagious on an offensive line when you got a couple guys that are doing that.
We have Tim Grenhard in studio back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for watching us on 38 The Spot. We've got Tim Grenhard in studio for a couple of more segments. Then Gary Lezak will tell us about the forecast. It's going to be in the 80s, but it's supposed to rain tonight and then be a hell of a lot colder tomorrow. We'll find out how much colder from Gary Lezak. Enjoy the 80s today one final time. But the show continues right now with Tim Grenhard. So much music in my ears. I feel like dancing on Sports Radio 810 WHB.